Hi everybody, you're listening to The Rope Podcast with Vox and Maya. Thanks for supporting the show.
This is a show with adult content, so if you are not of legal age where you live, then turn off now.
Rope bondage is a risky activity, and you shouldn't attempt it without first getting proper training. Listen to episode 0 if you haven't already.
Fox is a rigger and Maya is a bottom. We are long-term rope partners who live in Bangkok, Thailand. We love to share our passion for rope with the wider community.
This episode is made possible by our patrons who support us each month. If you would like to help, head to ropepodcast.com to see many options.
This year, we want to focus on bringing the Rope Podcast to a wider audience. To achieve that, we would like to ask you to follow us on Instagram and reshare this episode in your Instagram stories. We are Rope Podcast on Instagram.
Another thing that helps us is if you give us a star rating on Apple Podcasts. It's anonymous, so you won't have your name visible on the internet connected with a kinky podcast, don't worry. And now going on with the show.
Ceci Ferox is a Berlin-based queer, kinky and fat sexologist, kink activist and rope nerd. They have been teaching Japanese-inspired rope bondage since 2014 and are currently working as one of the house teachers at Karada House in Berlin. Ceci is inspired by creativity and understanding the smallest details of tying and communication technique. This has led to Ceci being an expert in tailoring ties for different needs. They are currently stoking a fat rope revolution. Hi, Ceci, and welcome on the Rope Podcast.
Thank you.
So, to get us started today, how did you discover rope bondage in the first place?
I don't know if I really discovered it because I was about 7 years old when I had my first fantasy about maybe not rope bondage, but being restrained. But I think it was very inspired by this book of erotic fantasies that I found in my parents' bookcase. And I was very drawn to anything that had to do with bondage. So it's kind of always been there. That's how I discovered it. And then I've been exploring it since I was a teenager. But since I was a teenager, I've been exploring it in different ways.
Do you remember what the book was or anything about that book?
It was a very, I think, maybe even 70s, but definitely 80s, a book, Women's Erotic Fantasies, but it was in Finnish. I'm from Finland.
That sounds amazing. I want that book.
And so when you were a teenager, how did you kind of get from where you were then to where you are now, which is very different in terms of rope bondage?
Well, as a teenager, there's this moment where I think a lot of people kind of lose the sense of what they were interested in before the normativity of sexuality comes and overrides everything. And then you're just interested in the kind of normal sexuality. But I got over that pretty quickly. So I think I was 16 or 17 when I started experimenting more with this hardware store rope and this kind of bondage, two naughty boys, all of this classic Western style stuff. But then how did I get more into this Japanese inspired stuff? I was 24. Ish. And I met some people. I saw some people tying. I met some people in Copenhagen. I got tied up in a way that was much more connective. What was happening at the time in Finland was very engineer-minded rope. So people would be looking at books and looking at videos and just trying to recreate the ties. But there wasn't really any kind of texture to the collaboration or the connectiveness or the feeling side of that. Yeah, so I traveled, I met people, I got these experiences, and then I immediately started organizing events and workshops and bringing teachers because I just really wanted people to learn to tie in a way that I wanted to get tied in.
Oh, that's awesome. And how long ago was that?
This is, I think it's 10 or 11 years ago.
Okay.
And yeah. So then how did you end up at Karada House? Because you're in a different country now?
Yeah, I'm in a different country I'm originally from Finland, from Helsinki, and now I live in Berlin in Germany. So how did I end up at Karada? I think it's... but I've understood that they saw me teach at the big rope event, and they really liked my style. And then they asked me to teach at the first queer rope, which was supposed to be in person, but then the pandemic hit. So it was moved to be online. And then I was teaching online, and they liked how I was doing that. And then I was teaching some other classes online. And then I started to think about, ah, now is a good moment in my life when I could move out of Finland. Thinking of my options, Berlin felt like a very solid choice. And then when I started to think about this, they offered that I can be one of the house teachers if I move here. So in the end, I did. I studied to be a sex therapist first, and then I moved here. And now I've been one of the house teachers for 3 years.
So what does it mean to be a house teacher?
It means that we plan the program together. We kind of, like, there's some people who we invite to teach from outside of our core group, from other countries, or for bigger events, weekend workshops. But then we have a core curriculum and kind of like our usual stuff that we teach. And it's just us house teachers who do that. So it means that I'm teaching between 1 and 3 workshops per week. Sometimes it's rope, sometimes it's other kinds of BDSM, sexuality, relationship stuff.
And one of the things that I've read in your writings is that you're very passionate about learning yourself and developing yourself. So what kind of things have you done to grow your own experience and knowledge?
So I have taken quite a few workshops in my time. Now I'm not as active anymore with workshops, or I do go to workshops, but I go as a bottom. I don't go as the rigger, because there's some things that I just learned much better through this embodied experience of being in the ropes. But I would say for me, what's the most important part is to always have this research-oriented mindset, like curiosity towards the rope that I'm doing, and the acceptance of failure. Because if I always try to be perfectionistic and always try to do everything kind of right or perfectly, I will never have those opportunities to truly deeply understand the rope. So I don't learn in a way of trying to copy something perfectly or trying to copy what is happening or going to workshops and just memorizing things. And I've always been really bad at this. I really do not remember patterns. I try to understand why the things work they do. I try to understand why teachers make specific choices with their patterns, so that I can take all these little details and put them together in new ways. So it's very integrated learning that I'm aiming for.
Okay. So you said your teaching style was noticed at events and then online, and that's how you got invited to join Karada House. What do you think defines your teaching style? How would you describe it?
It's a good question. Hard to answer. So I have a background in pedagogy. So my master's is in community education. I understand how groups work. I understand how to help people feel relaxed and safe in spaces, to help them feel like they belong and that they have community, that they're kind of there together. And I try to make as much space as possible for people to have this kind of deep understanding, to have space to figure out their relationship to the material. So I would say that if you look at a lot of teachers, there's this kind of emphasis of showing really flashy things and teaching things that photograph really well.
Yeah.
And it's great for marketing, and it's great for people getting the dopamine of yeah, I did the thing. I don't believe it's so great for deeply understanding the material. And my pace tends to be slower, and there tends to be more time and space for integration and repetition and going deeper into the material. Yeah, so I would say that's the definition, but it also really depends on what I'm teaching. If it's something technical, it's a different way of teaching than if it's something where we're dealing with emotions and connection and dynamics between people.
And you referenced already that you are a rope top, a rope bottom, and you self-tie. So how do all of those interact for you in terms of what you like more, like less, do more of, do less?
I can't compare them because they have a very different role in my life. So if I'm not tying, so if I'm not topping for a long time, it kind of comes up as a decline in my mental health. It's a place where I can be in a kind of hyper focus, a very mindful state. I'm really present, and it's a space for me to be creative and to feel somehow powerful, like to feel like there's things in life that I have control over, a person who I can take care of, have control, have power with or over. So it's a creative, it's a mindful space for me to top, and also a sexual space. Bottoming is something that I do more rarely. I'm very selective about who I bottom for because it's not just an amusement park ride. I need to feel like the person has the strength to carry me. And through bottoming, in the ideal case, I can access emotions that are hard to process in other situations, like anger or vulnerability or failure. And the way I like to play is I really like to be overwhelmed. I really like to safe word. I really like to be pushed to the limits of what I can do. So somehow it's like a very processing space, empowerment space, and also a space of connection, a space of feeling like I'm achieving something deeper with somebody. And then with self-tying, like there's the themes kind of overlap, but in my mind, in my body, they are different. So with self-tying, this is something that I use a lot for emotional regulation. So if I feel like I can't cope with life, I can self-tie to kind of make myself more present. But I also use it for masturbation. So there's like two very different ways in which I do self-tying.
You spend a lot of time and energy doing rope for work. How much space does that leave you for rope in your personal life?
I had some years here since the pandemic started when I didn't do so much rope for fun. First it was the pandemic, and then it was moving to another country. Because as a person, I generally take about 2 years to feel comfortable enough with somebody to start tying with them. Like, it doesn't mean that we meet every day for 2 years, but it's just this kind of process of understanding who this person is. And what's really important to me is that I feel valued as a person. Doesn't matter if I'm topping or bottoming, I need to feel like I'm important as a person, not just for my skills or for some experience or for, yeah, whatever. So there was some years that I wasn't doing so much rope for fun and was doing more just rope for work. But now the situation is much better, and I have some rope partners topping and bottoming, and it feels really good. I mean, also just doing stuff for work has been feeling good, but there's been a level of creativity that has been lacking, because in workshops, it's the workshop that I need to deal with, like the topic of that workshop. And then if I've had clients who I'm tying, it's a service space for me. Of course, there's some creativity, but I can't let loose in the same way. It can't be ridiculous in the same way as some of my sessions in private are.
So talking of workshops, one of the many, many workshops that you run and teach about is Fat Rope, which many of our listeners have asked for more perspectives on. They really want to hear about it. And it's an interesting topic because for some people, they don't necessarily want to identify as fat. And so I wondered, how can we handle that kind of challenge for people? How can we still give them access? Talk to us a bit about this topic.
Yeah, so I was just watching some TikToks yesterday. There's this, what was his handle? I think his name was something like Hot Fat Guy or somebody like this. And he was talking about this topic, how fat is a qualifier. Like, we have made it to mean something, like to have a meaning. We have used it as an insult, but fat is just a qualifier, like muscular or thin. Fat is a way to describe the body. And the reason why I want to use fat and not larger or bigger is that it's specific. I'm not talking about tying people who are bigger than you. I'm talking about tying fat people. And fat people are soft and they're squishy and they have different weight distributions in their body. And when we get specific about what we need to know about tying fat people, it's very important. The language I'm using is very important for that. Because I can't talk about fat as a qualifier of the body. I can't talk about it as a texture that the body has if I'm trying to avoid using the word fat.
I think that's very helpful and very practical. And I think it's really useful for people to understand that background. So let's go a bit deeper. Who is Fat Rope for? What does it mean for you to be fat?
So this is something I actually kind of struggle with personally, because I'm also in the fat activism community outside of Rope. And the kind of size at which fat starts outside of Rope is much higher than where it starts with Rope. It's getting better now with Rope. Like, it's like people who would not be considered fat outside of Rope are starting to not be considered fat in Rope. But especially when I started out, I was really not fat, but I was going to kind of intense weekend workshops with the best teachers at the time. And I was bottoming, and I was always the biggest bottom there. And on like a outside of Rope context, in that context, I would not be fat, but in Ropes I was, because the teachers were tying people who were very thin, small, and bendy. And I didn't really fit that category. So in Ropes, who is fat? This is really a self-determination question. I can't really give any limits for that. It's more about, do you feel the discrimination? Like, do you feel like you don't fit into the spaces because you are somehow not what you are seeing around you? Do you feel that there's discrimination or that you're an outsider? And do you have any of the, how would I say, do you experience any of the issues that are associated with a body that is soft? For example, ropes bunching up, losing tension, or just things being really painful, for example, on the thighs. Like, do you experience any of the things that are associated to having a soft body?
Are there also advantages to a soft body in Rope in your experience?
Yeah, so I haven't done research on it, but I have this theory that the fat might be protecting nerves on the arms.
I agree with that theory very much.
And it would make sense. It would make sense that if you have more stuff between the skin and the nerves, it's going to be protective. It's going to be cushioning. So for sure, there's also when you're used to carrying more weight around, you tend to be stronger in your muscles. Like you just tend to have more strength. This is especially great if you are the person who is tying, but there can be advantages also for the people who are in the ropes. So this is something I notice a lot when I am tying fat people or watching fat people tie. I'm always amazed by like, how are you able to take that? That requires so much strength. And it kind of comes from carrying more body around. And often there, it's not always, but often people tend to have a higher pain threshold. Because you're just more used to being in pain, which is not great in itself. But for rope, this can really work.
And what do you think people's false preconceptions are about fat bodies in rope?
The one I hear the most is that people are actually told that they can't be tied up. Or if they can, they can't be suspended. And this is absolutely not true. Like, this is not true in any way. Like, even people who have chronic pain and don't want that pain to be aggravated still can be tied up. You can still find ways of suspending people and modifying things in a way that that's possible. So that's the, like, number one thing is that everybody can be tied up and can be suspended. I also hear a lot of myths about not being flexible, and this is also not true. Usually fat people tend to be more flexible, but if you add an extra 10 centimeters of fat between the back and the arm, like imagine putting a thin person in a box tie and putting a pillow between the back and the arm. It's not about flexibility, it's just about how the body is, like how things are distributed and what makes sense for that body.
And if it's the rigger, if it's the rope top who's the fat person, how is that potentially going to affect the way to tie or the techniques?
It doesn't have to make any difference. Sometimes if you're tying on the floor, it can feel a bit clunky to move around. It doesn't feel like this elegant dance often when you're more fat because you need to move things around more. So maybe you're tying in a way where you're sitting more stationary and moving your rope partner around. Or some people might want to sit on a chair. Yeah. But then you have the added benefit of being stronger and having more weight. So lifting people is often easier than for people who don't have the mass.
Can you give us maybe some tips for fat rope bottoms?
Yeah, so when you're getting tied, and this is maybe more a tip for the people who are tying, people who are fat, you need to think about tension. So the ropes usually need to be more tight, unless there's some kind of condition where that's not possible. So if it's painful or it's not accessible to make the ropes more tight, then of course you can't do that. But tension is very important, making everything more tight. Structure is important. So when like the wraps around the body are longer, you need to have more structure to cut up that structure. Because otherwise you have a long length of rope that can move around because it's so long. It has a lot of flexibility. So adding more frictions on top or cinches, things like this, will help everything stay in place, especially if making the ropes more tight isn't accessible. So tension and structure are very important. Adding frictions, adding cinches. And then it's actually not super necessary in most cases to add more support for the body. This is something I've noticed, that if you have the right structure and the right tension, the same amount of wraps is going to be enough for different sizes of bodies. But sometimes people do want more support, and this is especially true in cases like maybe a mermaid tie where your butt will become very heavy. So maybe you need some extra support there. With adding extra support, you have to understand fat as a texture. And there's different kinds of fat. There's some people have more dense kind of stable fat. It doesn't move around. It might be kind of attached to the muscles more. So it just feels more solid. It feels like almost like a muscle, but it's actually fat. And on this, you can just add more wraps, whatever. Like, it's not going to make a huge difference. But some people or some spots in the body, like the inner thigh, will have softer fat. Softer fat also, people who have lost a lot of weight often have this kind of fat that is very soft. And then if you add just another wrap to the next to the wraps that are already there, everything's just going to bunch up. So the body is going to create a valley and all of the ropes will fall into that valley. And then instead of adding extra support, you have added extra pressure. So if the fat is soft, I use this Michelining technique. It's from the Michelin man who has all these little kind of rings of fat. So this is what you need to do with the rope. Then you create this Michelin man effect, and you make sure that there is a little pad of fat between each wrap so that the wraps can't collapse on top of each other. And then you actually get the support that you need.
Those are really great tips, Ceci. So for our listeners who would like to know more and to take your workshop on this subject, is this currently a workshop you're teaching online or in Berlin or both? How does it work?
So I just finished 3 workshop series on fat rope. It's going to come again at some point, but I just finished it. So it's going to take a moment. But I do teach it online. And you can invite me to your local rope community to teach this stuff. I am organizing this fat rope, what did I call it? Something with disrupt and organize and something like this. This one is more about like organizing community around fat rope. So if you're curious about that, that's a workshop that is coming up.
Where can our listeners find you online?
You can find me on Instagram as Ceci Ferox. You can find me on my website ceciferox.fi. I mostly teach for Karada House, and you can then find Karada House also on Instagram or on the website karada-house.de.
Awesome, Ceci. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
And have fun tying.